cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks, the music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by the one and only, you know him, you love him, or at least you tolerate him, John Mariano. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm coming off of a really weird episode. I mean, it was set up to be weird because we were going to talk about X-Files, so I thought.
Right.
And then I did my best. I did my best to give the audience what they were coming for. But I'm hoping today, we brought him back again. I'm hoping he brings a little bit more to this show than he brought to the last one.
I'm hoping he's at least seen this show. Joining us once again, our podcasting brother from another mother, Jeff Saunders. Jeff, have you watched the show of the theme we're covering here this week?
I have.
Yeah,
and this one I can say I've watched every episode, at least a couple of times. I've seen all four of the movies that they made, and all 18 of the spinoffs. Wait, that never mind. Scratch that last part. But I have seen this show. Last week I chose a theme song because it kind of tied into like my own X-Files experiences. So this week I thought we might tie into something that I have a little more experience with, and that's being drunk at a bar.
I was going to ask you about that because you've been known to partake in the spirits on occasion, as have I. I'm currently partaking in some Weiser Special Blend as we speak. John, of course, never touches the stuff. So, John, have you ever watched the show that we're about to cover here today?
Religiously.
Nice.
Right? Like Thursday nights at NBC, especially in the 90s, became world famous. But long before that, you know, there's like a timeline because before the Seinfeld stuff and the Friends stuff and the must-see TV times, the Huxtables owned that. And before the Huxtables owned it, a little bar in Boston named Cheers owned it. And for a very long time, NBC owned Thursday nights. Mm-hmm. And this is like the one that got them there.
Without a doubt. Cheers was, and we're talking about Cheers. We're talking about one of the most iconic theme songs in TV history. Was kind of a slow starter. Season one ranked 75th with only 10 million viewers back in 1982, but started gaining traction, ranked 34th the next year, and then 13th in season three. And by the time season four hit, it was a top five show. And it stayed there all the way through season 11. It made it 11 seasons on network television, which is pretty big. And actually, that finale is still, I think, one of the most watched finales in TV history. And I remember watching that. And afterwards, they did a kind of a reunion show afterwards with the whole cast. And one of the most celebrated sitcoms of all time is Cheers, created by Glenn and Les Charles and James Burrows, one of the most famed TV directors of all time. He would go on to direct dozens of episodes from like Frasier and Wings and Cheer and Friends and other sitcoms like that. He's like the king of the three camera sitcom. And it really all started with this show way back in 1982, starring Ted Danson, Shelley Long, and just an amazing cast of characters. Jeff, this was kind of one of your picks. We kind of pushed you into it to actually pick a song from a show you've seen. But what are some of your fondest memories of Cheers?
So I started watching Cheers, oh gosh, probably around 89, which it had been on for a few years before then. It was one of those shows that when I was a latchkey kid. For those that don't know what that means, is I got home from school before my parents got home from work. So I was there for a little while by myself, and I would watch TV, you know, before I did my homework or chores or whatever. And you had like your children's programming would finish up like around 5 p.m. my time. And then after that, they would show like some shows in syndication. And Cheers was one of the shows that came on, I don't know, after G.I. Joe or Transformers or something, but it was one of the shows that would come on after that. And I immediately got hooked on it. Now I was like, when I was watching it, I was maybe 13 or 14 when I started watching it, or maybe even a little younger than that, a lot of the jokes didn't hit me, but there was something about the interplay of the characters that felt very, they all felt very familiar, you know, and there was a dynamic there that I hadn't really seen on TV before, and I got hooked on it. I actually was able to, through watching it in syndication, I caught up to where it actually was, like, as far as like, as it was coming out as a new broadcast. And then that's when I started watching it on Thursday nights. And then a bunch of my best friends in high school, that I've known like for most of my life, we would all come to school on Friday morning. And, kind of the way, you know, in the adult world, y'all gather around the water cooler and talk about whatever the latest show is. We would get together before school started in the halls, and we would talk about Cheers from the night before. And it's just stuck with me all of my life. And like I said, my oldest, dearest friends will still text each other from time to time and make a Cheers reference. So it's definitely kind of part of my DNA. And I think it's like that for a lot of people.
Well, and John, you kind of alluded to this, but that Thursday night block of must-see TV, like, pretty iconic back in the 80s, right? We had Cheers, and you had Night Court, and you had The Cosby Show, and then shows like A Different World kind of following that up. You and I are about the same age. Those Thursday nights were just appointment view.
Oh, 100%. And like, of those shows, Night Court was my big show, which kind of spoils part of what I was going to go into later as we got into it. But Harry Anderson showing up as Harry the Hat on several episodes of Cheers, starting in season one and ending in 93, their final season. The character was a con man and a magician, and a lot of similarities. Granted, he was a con man, but a lot of similarities to Judge Harold T. Stone, who's one of my most iconic characters in TV history. And I'm a huge fan of both him and John Larroquette, and we could do Night Court another night. Tonight, we're here to talk about Cheers, and you know, I was going to give Jeff a little crap because he comes in around 89. That's after Diane's gone and Rebecca's now here. But in reality, I didn't really start watching the show until like 85-ish. And at that point, Coach was already off the show because he, you know, tragically, the actor Nicholas Colasanto had passed away. And they brought on his replacement, the younger Woody Boyd, played by Woody Harrelson. And Woody was like one of my instant favorite characters on the show. And my father kept saying, like, Coach was such a great character. I eventually go back and watch the earlier episodes and appreciate, you know, the one thing about this show that you could talk about is it was on for, what was it, like 11 seasons?
Mm-hmm.
Woody Harrelson shows up in season four, right, to take over for Coach with this younger character, and still does 200 episodes of the show, right? And didn't start doing it till season four. That's unheard of, right? The replacement actor had done not only 100 episodes, but 200 episodes. I think that there are more episodes with Rebecca than Diane, though I'm not 100% sure of that, but I'm pretty sure. This show went through so many changes, did so many things that became iconic tropes of sitcoms because of how long it was on the air, what they had to adjust for. It's kind of like what Happy Days was to the late 70s, early 80s, Cheers was to the mid 80s, early 90s in defining an era of sitcoms.
And they dealt with everything. I remember this is the first sitcom that really dealt with death in terms of Coach. Who got very sick in season three, like you mentioned, John, and his real life passing, or even like Eddie Levesque, Carla's husband, who got killed by a Zamboni. You know, I remember liking that character because he was French Canadian. Oh, we got a Canadian on TV. Then he gets run over by a Zamboni. But, you know, it wasn't afraid to deal with tougher issues than a lot of sitcoms of the time. And that's one thing that I really took away from Cheers. They could deal with the silly stuff with, like, you know, Cliff being on Jeopardy. And his final Jeopardy answer being, who are three people who've never been in my kitchen? And you know, making a joke out of that, but also dealing with kind of the headier topics as well. So Cheers really kind of hit all the bases, so to speak, especially when you're talking about a show that dealt with a relief pitcher owning a bar. But my parents owned a bar, so I really related to Cheers because we had our own Norm and we had our own Cliff and patrons like that. So Cheers was a real mainstay for me because I was working in my parents' bar on a Thursday night watching Cheers and wishing I was working that bar instead of the bar I was working in.
That's pretty meta.
It really is. But that theme song, wow. When you're talking about iconic sitcom theme songs, you're talking about Where Everybody Knows Your Name by Gary Portnoy. And everybody knows that song. We talked about it on the X-Files show. When you hear that, those six notes, that dun, 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 you know what the hell you're watching. When you hear dun, 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 if you were alive in the 80s, you know what the hell that theme song is. Cheers was, it's legitimately one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. And is routinely on, you know, TV Guide's 50 greatest TV shows of all time. I think it was ranked 18th in 2002. It should be higher in my book, because when you're talking about all time three camera, or not even three camera, like it could have been a single camera. It was more of a cinematic theme song, even though it was filmed in front of a live studio audience, as they told you every single week. Cheers is still one of the most iconic sitcoms of all time. And you can catch it on Disney Plus, Crave in Canada, Peacock, Hulu in the States. It still holds up to this day. We're in 2000. What year is it? 2022. It still holds up.
The show, Corey, is 40 years old this year.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, the show starts in 1982, and it's still relevant a lifetime later. You know, it brought in many great characters in our life. Mm-hmm. Maybe before we start playing the theme song, who are some of your favorite characters on the show, Jeff?
Well, I think like my two, well, my three, my four, it's hard to pick just one. Probably the character I relate to the most is Woody. A lot of the comedy that I do, a lot of the jokes I do come from like kind of a someone that's not so with it upstairs, and in a lot of the same vein as the Woody character. But my two favorite characters have got to be Norm and Cliff. There's just something about them. And I've always kind of enjoyed like a good comedic duo, whether you go back to Abbott and Costello or I'm blanking on them, but your guys that do the March of the Wooden Soldiers,
Laurel and Hardy.
There's just those comedy duos, the Odd Couple, that just like, they're gold. Like when it's done right, it's comedic gold. And Norm and Cliff just play so well off of each other. And bringing it back around to Woody, like all of the, gosh, you can probably find like a million of them on YouTube, but like all of the times where he comes into the bar and Woody's like, "Hey, Mr. Peterson, how are you doing?" And then his responses to that, classic.
Well, and
so well done.
I worked in a bar and we had our own Norm, and he would walk in every night and say, "Afternoon, everybody," and we'd all yell, "Norm." And
it's so perfect.
Yep. And yeah. Every bar has a know-it-all. Every bar has a Cliff Clavin. It's crazy. Yeah. Whether it be Canada or America, every bar has a know-it-all. And so those characters, just as someone who worked in a bar for like a decade, it just fits so well. But the one character I always gravitated to, ironically, was kind of Frasier, because he doesn't really belong there, but he ends up belonging there. Like when he's first brought in, you know, as love interest with Diane, you know, it's that fish out of water thing, but he becomes one of the gang, even with his kind of oddball characteristics that don't really fit with a Norm or a Cliff or anybody like that. Mm-hmm. He fits right in there. And I like Frasier a lot more on Cheers than I ever did on Frasier, if that makes sense. And I know somebody from our group is screaming at me right now because she loves Frasier, and I do too. But I like Cheers Frasier much more than Frasier.
You don't have to worry. Rumble. But you don't have to worry about Kristen McGee, because she does not listen to our shows.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes. So don't you worry about that.
So she's not going to come on and you know, talk about tossed salad and scrambled eggs.
No, she has made a bunch of idle promises that I don't expect her to keep. So don't worry about it. You can slam the Frasier show as much as you want here. One of my favorite characters that doesn't get mentioned enough, like I was a big Carla guy. You give me Carla Tortelli any day of the week, and my, like, some of the best one-liners in TV history. But in high school, my nickname, this is a true story, was Cliff Peterson. very, very much named after both Cliff and Norm. Cliff because I was a know-it-all, and Peterson because everyone knew my name, or at least knew me as Cliff. So it was a very fun thing that everywhere I would go with my buddies, somebody would inevitably know me. And then whenever we needed a useless fact pulled out of someone's ass, it was always my ass pulling the fact out of it. Whether it was true or not, I would stand by it and swear by it, which I think earned all parts of that nickname. So that's
very much Cliff, right? Because Cliff, you never knew if those facts were right or not.
Oh, and I wasn't doing it as a shtick. It was just like maybe either something I picked up on the show or I don't know. I was a kid, so who knows? But it was definitely something I did, and it was kind of funny, and you know, very much a part of me. So I mean, the show was big enough that my buddies out of nowhere, we didn't even talk about the show that much. I watched it on my own. They watched it on their own, and they decided to nickname me that out of nowhere, and it stuck for about a good 5 years there for me. But one cast member I don't think gets mentioned enough. I mentioned Carla, but B.B. Newworth as Lilith on this show did some amazing work that I don't think that we talk about enough. Because if you've ever seen B.B. Newworth, the actress, in other things, she is nothing like Lilith, the character, at all. And she does some remarkable work, kind of playing a villain on a show with so many likable personalities.
That is a good call. I'll agree with you on that one. What do you say, boys? Should we play a little bit of the Cheers theme from Gary Portnoy?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go all the way back to September 30th. 1982.
Taking your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? All those nights when you've got no lights, the check is in the mail. And your little angel hung the cat up by its tail.
The radio edits of this song always throw me off because I'm so familiar with the lyrics that I'm like singing along in my head. And the second things change up, and it almost hurts my head. I don't know how it affects you guys, but how familiar are you with the actual song? And do you have a similar like ice cream headache experience?
Absolutely. The first time I heard like the full thing, probably the first time a lot of Americans, well, a lot of viewers across the world did, was when they had their final episode. I think the artist that sings the song, like sang the whole thing as part of that live thing. And I thought it was new stuff then. Come to turn out, it's the song that the full song that was written beforehand. But yeah, I'm the same way. It throws me off because I'm singing along in my head right now, and then we're getting to words I don't know.
See, and I know this part just because I taped the final episode in the reunion special right after, mm-hmm. and I watched the hell out of them. So I remember they did a montage to the full song, which is what we're listening to here tonight. It's about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So I remember and your little angel hung the cat up by his tail. And I remember thinking back in the 80s, no, sorry, 93, when that aired, how cool that was. We got kind of the full version. So uh-huh. I do remember this version. But yeah, in my head, I'm like, I'm ready to jump into Sometimes You Want to Go, even though we're not quite there yet. So.
And your third fiance didn't show. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
struggles are all the same. You wanna be where everybody knows your name. Roll out of bed, Mr. Coffee's dead. The morning's looking bright. Morning's looking bright.
Sorry, I have to stop it there because it says Mr. Coffee's dead. And for some of our younger listeners, a Mr. Coffee is a pre-millennium Keurig.
Exactly. That's with a timer.
Yep.
And your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't even write. And your husband wants to be a girl.
Now that's kind of timely, and your husband wants to be a girl, right?
Well, it's timely, but I'm wondering where he's going because it's 1982, and like some of these lyrics, I'm just trying to figure out: was he writing for the show, or was he just writing a song that happened to work for the show?
I think the second one, actually, yeah, because
yeah,
that's not a storyline in the movie or in the show so much, right? But.
Well, he mentions a psychiatrist there in that part too.
Your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't. Yeah. And your third fiance didn't show. How many times is Frasier engaged on that show? It was Diane and Lilith, and gosh, there was at least two, right?
There are at least two for him. Sam had a bunch of loves. Not counting the big two with Diane and Rebecca. You know, he had plenty of others that he chased throughout the course of the show.
Yeah.
There's one place in the world where everybody knows your name. And they're always glad you came. You wanna go where people know people are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
It can't be an 80s TV theme song without a little saxophone in there.
Okay. I don't like any of this right now. Like, I want my piano. This is so overproduced versus what the actual song is. It's hurting my heart a little bit that we're going with this version, but we're already most of the way through it. Guys, really quick, starting with Corey, and then we'll go to Jeff, and then we'll go to me. Name, like, one of your favorite Cheers moments.
One?
Jesus. Yeah, just one.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't have to be your favorite moment. I'm just don't want to put you on the spot too much. Just name one of your favorite Cheers moments. Or you can name a couple if you want.
You know what? Cliff on Jeopardy. Absolutely love that. The Kelly song. Woody's song that he wrote for his girlfriend, which he really wanted a present. Those stand out. Those are probably my two favorite Cheers moments. How about you, Jeff?
I'm gonna go back to what I alluded to earlier with all the greetings for Norm when he comes in. Favorite one, Woody says, "Mr. Peterson, how's it going?" Norm replies, "Woody, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear." I relate to that a lot, especially when days are tough.
You know what? I found a moment here, if you'll indulge me. This was a pretty good one, too.
This looks like a nice, friendly place.
Sammy, you're too old to go on a date with two twins on the same night you're supposed to marry Diane without Rebecca knowing.
Okay, Carla, I'll make you a bet. If this affects my major league comeback, I'll sell the bar.
Woody, give me a beer.
I think you've had enough, Mr. Peterson. My chiropractor says I can't carry you home anymore.
Just give me another beer, you brain-dead hick. I'll kill you. I'll kill all of you.
Oh. Whoa, settle down, Nami. Oh. Gotta save those pipes for karaoke.
I love you guys.
That was a pretty good one.
That was good.
So I'm going with, there's an episode, a 1986 episode that for me was the pinnacle of Cheers. And Diane was still on the show at the time. Coach had passed, and they do a Thanksgiving episode. Where Diane is preparing Thanksgiving dinner, and you get pretty much the whole major cast sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner, and like it's so off center, like Diane's dressed as a pilgrim and trying to present Thanksgiving dinner. And you know, the whole episode, things deteriorate. And it finally ends in a big food fight with the whole cast at the end. It has poignant moments. They toast Coach. So it has like all the major notes on why Cheers was great, bottled up into one like 22-minute episode. It has the whole cast together on screen for the duration.
Great call. I remember that episode. Mm-hmm. That's a very good one.
And it's one of the few times they weren't in the bar.
That's true. And didn't Vera play a part in that one too? You don't ever see her or hear her, but I remember Vera being a...
You see her legs a couple of times, or at least one time at the top of the stairs.
Right.
But Vera, Norm's wife, one of the first great characters that you never get to see on a TV series.
That saxophone is awful. That is really distracting. That high-pitched sax, I fucking hate that. Other than that, one of the greatest TV theme songs of all time.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Johnny on this one. The parts that aren't like what I saw at the beginning or heard at the beginning of every episode are a little jarring. I think that my preference is that nice tight. However many seconds long version that we heard at the beginning of each show.
Hey, Lilith.
Query. If I had a problem and needed to talk to someone about it, would it be perpetuating a stereotype to actually select a bartender?
Well, that depends.
On what?
On what you just said.
I feel like a failure. A failure as a mother, ergo as a woman and a person. Do you make a drink for failures here at Cheers?
Oh, hold on a second. Phil, what are you drinking?
A Manhattan.
Manhattan. You know, sweetheart, I'll bet my bottom dollar that you're a pretty good mom.
Yes, well, considering that endorsement comes from a perennial Peter Pan with no sense of maturity or obligation, you'll excuse me if I don't leap over the bar, embrace you, and say, really, Sam, you think so?
Well, glad I could be there for you.
I'm sorry. Perhaps I'm just bitter because Frazier is succeeding with our son where I failed. He is indeed a better influence on my precious baby.
Her dry delivery was such a compliment to the rest of the show. Like the way the characters were so charismatic, and Bebe Neuwirth, like, just an underrated gem. And if you've seen her, like, she's done a lot of theater work, she's done other shows and other performances. She's nothing like this character. Like, she's a very charismatic actress, and her work is just outstanding. I did want to bring up, I was looking into the song a little bit while we were listening to that. So Portnoy and Hart Angelo wrote this song for the show. And the way we're all pointing out how overproduced this version sounds, after the success of the show, Portnoy goes back and records a longer version to release it as a single.
Gotcha.
And that's what we're listening to now. And it sounds very much like a lot of overthinking went on. And it was like, okay, now I need to get something out to capitalize on the success of this show. And I'm glad it worked out and whatever he made off of the single. But give me the original every day of the week.
It's kind of like Friends. Same thing, right? The band, the Rembrandts, kind of released a longer version of the theme song to capitalize on the show's popularity. And it's not as good. I wanted to play that moment for you, John, because it was a great Bebe Neuwirth moment. I also love the Phil line, like, Did you make a drink for losers? I don't know. Phil, what are you drinking? Manhattan. Yeah, Manhattan. But there's also a great Norm moment here. Let's just check this out real quick.
Afternoon, everybody.
Norm! That is Lilith and Fraser's baby. Anybody?
First word.
First word of Lilith and Fraser's baby.
Said mommy.
What was his name? Frederick?
Frederick, yeah.
Yeah, Frederick's first word.
Norm.
Does Frederick ever make an appearance on Frasier, or do they just ignore the fact that Frasier's dead?
I was going to ask you that because I don't remember Frederick ever being on Frasier.
I don't know. He's referenced on there.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. Just like Lilith is referenced on there. But yeah, I don't think he's ever. I could be wrong.
Lilith shows up at some point on Frasier.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember that. Because I would tune in for the episodes of Frasier where people from Cheers that I liked over Frasier would show up.
Mm-hmm. I was on one, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was not a big Frasier fan of the Frasier show. I wasn't a big fan of a psychologist or a psychiatrist, whichever he was, doing a radio show in Seattle. None of that appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
But every time they brought a member of Cheers back, I'm like, God, I wish they had their own show.
Yeah.
Now, I talked about my favorite Cheers moments. I want to play a little bit of the Kelly song because this is one of my all-time favorite Cheers moments. So if you'll indulge me, here's Woody Boyd, as played by Woody Harrelson, singing his girlfriend, Kelly, a song he wrote for her. Very beautiful.
So, Corey, before we really get into the Kelly song, for people not familiar with Cheers, Woody Boyd gets engaged to a woman far out of his league.
Yes.
Her name happens to be Kelly. And it's very much a Billy Joel uptown girl sort of thing, where except Woody Boyd is like an assistant bartender in a local Boston bar. And Kelly is a very upscale from an affluent family. Think of like almost like an heiress along the lines of like a Kennedy. Like she's a very high affluent, highfalutin character and personality from this very, very wealthy family. And Woody, in his infinite wisdom, trying to impress her as they get engaged, writes this song for her.
Hey, my darling, you are my sunshine. Together I feel fine. Your smile is so lovely, your hair is so clean. You make me feel that the whole world is mine. Kelly, 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 Kelly. Because you're Kelly, 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 Kelly of mine.
So this is Woody Harrelson, circa mid-80s, with a lax, I'll describe it as a lackluster mullet. And he's in a room with a bunch of waspy, wealthy, yuppie 80s characters, and they are all looking at him like he just farted. And it was a wet fart, and it was a loud fart and a long fart. And his fiance, Kelly, is staring at him with the most adoring eyes as if this is the greatest thing she's ever heard.
But it's not over yet.
Mine, 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 mine.
Just lovely. And then, of course, the punchline of the whole thing, this is supposed to be for her birthday.
Woody, that was beautiful.
You really liked it?
Oh, I liked it more than anything.
Thanks.
So, where's my gift?
Yeah. And that kind of sums up Cheers, is yeah. like these bittersweet moments of this endearing sweetness wrapped in with things where characters stay true to themselves, right? Like Kelly, being from this affluent family, is looking for this monetary or some kind of thing of substance, not from, of substance, but materialistic item mm-hmm. from Woody, who, look, to his credit, goes off and writes the song for his fiance and uses every ounce of talent that might be in one of his fingers and writes this, because I don't think the rest of his fingers had much talent going on. And Woody Harrelson sells the crap out of this and goes on to have this huge career after Cheers. And people, I think, over time have forgotten he starts as this brilliant comedic performer.
No, it's very true. Like you said, Academy Award nominated, Woody Harrelson began his career at a little bar in Boston performing the Kelly song, and it's absolutely magical. Jeff, anything else you want to say about the wonder and glory that is Cheers?
not just that, like the characters on the show, you know. You watch a few episodes of this and you kind of feel like they're your family. You feel like you're in at the bar with them. And, you know, that all goes back to the all the actors and their portrayal, but also all the writers and the directors and people that put this great show together. And that's saying a lot with as many main characters as was in this ensemble cast. And you have characters like Kelly and Lilith and others who weren't even that. They were like outlier characters. But after seeing them a few times, you knew them so well. And you literally, everyone knew everyone's name, like the song said.
You're absolutely right. It's a rarity. When was the last time you what was the last successful sitcom, like classic sitcom, that was recorded live in front of a studio audience? You look at later sitcoms like The Office, you know, that was recorded more like a movie. What was the last great recorded live in front of a studio audience sitcom?
I mean, if you give me a minute, I could probably pull it up.
I don't know. Was Roseanne after this?
Roseanne. Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably Seinfeld? Roseanne, Seinfeld. I think they were on about the same time.
Friends went to 2005. That was recorded in front of a studio
audience. Yeah. Yeah, there were definitely a lot of shows like benefited from Cheers, and like a lot of the tropes from Cheers, like Johnny said earlier, mm-hmm. they carried over into other shows.
I don't even think there's that many out there now recorded in front of a live studio audience like Cheers was, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, and there's a difference. Like there were a lot of shows that used laugh tracks and stuff, but writers back then used the live studio audience to know whether or not the joke played. Mm-hmm. Right, because if it worked in front of the live studio audience, it would work on, you know, work for the home audience. And there was not enough feedback to know whether or not it would work at home. So that's why they did it a lot of the time.
And I remember watching some behind the scenes of Friends, which was directed by James Burrows a lot of the time, who co-created Cheers, where they would do a joke. If it didn't land with the studio audience, they would quickly kind of reconvene with the writers and try and come up with a better joke. And a lot of times it was Matthew Perry, who played Chandler, who came up with the better joke, and then they would tape it again and try and get the bigger laugh. So that's maybe an element that's missing out of popular television nowadays. You know, of course, everything for a streamer is recorded, you know, without a studio audience, and even network stuff. I can't think of a show offhand that's recorded in front of a studio audience.
Yeah.
Kind of miss some of that magic.
The only one I can think of is The Conners, which is a continuation of Roseanne.
So I have one for you. For sure, Big Bang Theory was one of the last ones,
right?
Recently, that did live studio audience. I haven't watched a lot of TV recently, but I was just digging around trying to find a show later than the ones that you guys are mentioning, mm-hmm. and Big Bang Theory definitely covers that bracket.
Yeah.
So I would guess a lot of those Two and a Half Men, a lot of those sitcoms of the 2000s definitely still did live studio audience. So it still gets used here and there for I guess multi-camera shows, but mm-hmm. but the single camera show has been popularized so much at this point. You know, I don't know if I'm sure they will go back at some point. You know, Jimmy Kimmel's done a series of specials celebrating like Norman Lear called Live in Front of a Studio Audience, where they actually like record the show live mm-hmm. and like they did a Different Strokes episode and Kevin Hart was in it and I forgot who played Willis, but it was Damon Wayans played Willis, Kevin Hart played Arnold, and Snoop Dogg played Willis's best friend. John Lithgow played Mr. Drummond, and they did a fantastic job. They did a Facts of Life show, so they did this as a tribute to Norman Lear, and maybe you know if these things get popular enough, they'll bring back the sitcom with the live studio audience. I don't like a laugh track. I don't like being told to laugh, but I feel there's a different energy when you have a live studio audience to a sitcom where it's jokes that are going to work or that do work, and you're not at home laughing by yourself, and there is a group of people somewhere else that reacted to the same joke you're about to react to, and it's not a cue to laugh, but more just, you know, it creates an atmosphere and environment. I think some shows are missing that with these.
Yeah. I would definitely recommend like checking out The Conners, because it still comes on, and it's a continuation of Roseanne, but they wrote her character out of it mm-hmm. After that stuff went on a couple of years ago. But it's filmed just like these older shows were, and they're definitely keeping that art alive on there. And it revolves mostly around Dan's character, or would that be John Goodman's character, Dan? Yeah, but it's good stuff.
And you're right, though. Kind of a dying breed, the multi-camera in front of a studio audience sitcom, which The Conners still kind of carrying the torch for. Guys, anything else you want to mention about Cheers before we wrap it up here today?
I just think, you know, like, sitcoms of that time, especially Cheers, but you can go back and like we mentioned a bunch of them earlier, like The Cosby Show. And I know Bill Cosby had become a problematic personality, but that doesn't take away the work of the people on the show. The kids were outstanding and steal many of those episodes out from under Bill Cosby. Married with Children. So there are sitcoms of this era. We'll probably get into more of them. I'd like to get back into movies for the next few episodes, Corey. I appreciate diving into TV, mm-hmm. but I kind of miss songs with a voice, being that somebody is singing along, or at least talking about a movie or a particular thing. Talking about a lot of episodes in the period of time of our podcast becomes problematic because you're inevitably going to leave stuff out, and I'm sure we're leaving out great swaths of why Cheers was great. There were so many great aspects. There were eras of Cheers. There's the Coach era. You know, there's the Sam and Diane era. You know, Coach era is part of that. There's the Rebecca era. The characters come and go. Characters get killed off. People die and are replaced. You know, Cheers and Night Court to me are two of the biggest sitcoms that of my childhood, of our childhood, that dealt with this. You had the bailiffs. You know, in Night Court, it was always Bull Shannon, but who he was paired with was constantly getting changed. There's a big cast turnover in like I think it's like the third season of Night Court. Cheers went through a lot of its own things, and it didn't just survive, it stayed number one through most of them, right? And if it wasn't number one, it was a top 10 show through most of them. It was like unstoppable. It was a force of nature, and the jokes still play today because the writers were masters of that craft, and the actors and the ensemble just knew each other and the chemistry works so well.
Well said. On that note, let's wrap it up. Jeff, where can the folks find you out there on the interweb?
You can find me on the Twitters and the Instagrams at JeffSaunders74. Sometimes I'm on there putting some stuff that you can check out. And then I'm also occasionally still putting a podcast from time to time out on the Feeding the Monster podcast feed. And then I'm occasionally putting out an episode of The Truly Bizarre World over on the Feeding the Monsters YouTube channel.
Perfect. And Johnny, where can the folks find you?
They can find me on Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. They can find me right here on Backtracks Theme Music. And they can find me at John Mariano NY on Twitter.
There you have it. And you can find John and I on our new show, Backtracks Polka Party, soon to drop here. Look forward to that. That's going to be great. We're going to have all your favorite Walter Ostenak and Frankie Yankovic polkas. But until then, oh, yeah, it's going to be great. But until then, you can find me at CD Morset, at BT Aerosmith, doing the Aerosmith show with Johnny. And, of course, and the podcast will rock, the Van Halen show with one Mark Kammeyer, who keeps begging to be on this show. But John won't let him come on yet, and I'm wondering why.
I will say that after the Jeff experiences, as long as Mark watches the show or movie that he wants to talk about, I'm going to have to allow it now because we've allowed Jeff on. And the first episode was very much a train wreck. This one was very much on point. Jeff brought his Cheers knowledge, his Cheers game. My problem with this episode wasn't Jeff at all. And Corey, it's not you, but it's this re-recording of the Cheers theme song. Really hurts my heart. I'm going to go and watch an old episode of the Cheers right now just to wash that song out of my head.
And I don't blame you at all, my friend. But to end this week, this week's episode, I'm going to take you all the way back to 1993 and the final moments from one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, Cheers. Thank you very much for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time.
Well, I'm off. But, Sammy, can I let you in on a little secret?
Sure.
I knew you'd come back.
You did?
You can never be unfaithful to your one true love. You always come back to her.
Who is that?
Think about it, Sam.
Well, I tell you, I'm the luckiest son of a bitch on earth.
Sorry, we're closed.